You're listening to audio from New Life Church in Decatur, Georgia. For more resources or messages, check out newlife-atl.org.
Are you ready for the word of the Lord? Grab your Bibles, if you would, please, and open them to the book of Joshua, the book of Joshua. I want us to look at two portions of the book, chapter 1, as well as chapter number 6, Joshua chapter 1 and Joshua chapter 6. This is not a series today. We're going to be speaking just in this one message, but I don't know how that's going to fare. In the first service, we had to start this service a little bit later because the Lord just really, really did what he wanted in the first service. And so we give him freedom to do that in this service as well. We're going to be talking about worship at the wall. Worship at the wall. Worship at the wall. And I did not have the ability to bring out this idea to you, but the wall here is very significant. It is that thing that stands between us and what God has promised us. The wall is that barrier. It is that thing that separates us from living in and experiencing the thing that God has promised to us. And God has promised to every one of us his blessings, his future, his preordained purpose for our lives. You are not an accident. You have a purpose. You are created for the glory of God, to the pleasure of God. God designed you with intentionality. God designed you with specificity, not just in your physical appearance and your outward expressions of who you are, but the internal personality, the talents, the skill sets. Everything about who you are has been meticulously designed by God. Not one person in this room is an accident. And God has a perfect, he has a perfect, flawless plan for your life. Where he wants you to be, what he wants you to do, how he wants you to do it, what kind of living he wants you to have, what your tomorrow looks like, what your next week looks like, what your 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20, or lifetime experience looks like. God has already figured it out. He has already figured it out. And he has destined you and me to receive it. It's a promise from him, and I have my promises, and I'm certain that you have yours. It's a promise that God's given, whether it is about a career path or whether it is a promise in your family, whether it's a promise God has over your marriage, whether it's a promise God has with your finances or a promise that God has with the place and position in life that you will hold, whether it's a promise God has with the impact and significance that your life will have on the earth, on the next generation or generations to come. The contribution that you will leave in the earth, what you will put your mark and stamp on, is a promise from God. And every single one of us have a calling to fulfill that promise. Salvation itself is a promise of God. You were elect according to the foreknowledge of God. God did not wait until you got yourself together before he elected you to be saved. God saved us. God demonstrated his love towards us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That Jesus saw you. He saw the best you, the full you. He saw you at your highest potential, at the zenith of your character, and the zenith of your personality, and the zenith of your righteous living. He saw you at the best of who you could be, the fullness of the Holy Spirit living through you, and he elected you, and he saw you before you ever became it, and elected you to be it. That's the promise of God. And if you are elected in salvation, then why do we not believe that we have been elected in everything that's less than salvation? If God has a plan for your eternal life, certainly he has a plan for your mortal life. If God has a plan for your eternal destiny, certainly he has a plan for your terrestrial destiny, your destiny on this earth. It's the promises of God. And all of us have them. But there is, for everybody, a wall. There is this barrier between what God has designed for us and what we have. For all of us, there is a wall. Something that stops us from possessing those promises. Here's the way this looks. Every promise of God comes with an inherent obstacle attached to it. Every promise of God comes with an inherent, innate obstacle attached to it. It's almost like the obstacle is intrinsic in the promise. You can't have one without the other. And what we're talking about today is not so much possessing the promises as we are talking about one element of that possession, one element of how we possess it, and that is the element of worship. That is the element of worship. Whenever we are trying to pursue the promises of God, there are typically two things that most people do. One, most people pray. And when they're trying to pursue after God's promises to get what God has for them, they typically pray, God, give it to me. God, please allow me to have it. God, if you would, make this happen. God, if you would, stop this issue, start this problem, open this door, grant this opportunity. Oh, God, if you would just enable me to receive this, enable for this thing to happen, bless me, heal me. God, if you would deliver me, God, let it be good news. I mean, all of us, whenever you have this inkling, this thing within you that says God has this for you, all of us quickly, unreservedly pray. A lot of people pray. Fewer people believe. A lot of people pray. Fewer people believe. Fewer people, whenever there's a promise or there's something that God has for them, and they pray, give me, bless me, heal me, do for me, open the doors, grant it, etc., etc. When they pray, very few them come to a place where they believe it. But if you can supply faith to your prayer, Jesus says nothing is impossible. If you could believe, if you have the audacity to take God at his word, to literally believe that what God said is to be, that if you can match your faith with God's will, if you can make the connection between your faith and the will of God, your faith and God's design, your faith and God's desire. Is anybody hearing me? If you can make that connection, Jesus said this. He said you could speak to the mountains. To this extent, it's hyperbole, of course, but he's using the extreme illustration to show the weight of the truth. He says that you could speak to the mountain and the mountain would have to uproot itself and be cast in the sea. That is how powerful faith is when it matches God's will. I dare you to have the audacity, the courage, even the insanity to repeat what God says. That if God were to say it, no, you can't just walk up to mountains and tell them go into the sea because you like that mountain better over there than you do here. See, it's not your word. It's your agreement with his word. It's not your will. It's your faith in his will. And if you have faith that level, that strong, that convicted, you could speak to the mountain Jesus uses in hyperbolic language to the extreme to stress a point. You could speak as it were even to a mountain and the mountain would have to obey your voice. Now he's trying to say if it's true for a mountain, how much more true is it for a job or for a career or for a decision or for a dilemma or for a marriage or for a family or for raising kids or for finances or for schooling or for education or for direction? How much more can God say, are you hearing me? If your faith could match his will. So when God gives a promise, a lot of people pray. God, give me, do for me, help me, bless me, heal me, deliver me. A lot of people pray. Even fewer have faith. They pray, but they don't have that kind of faith. Doubt if it is going to They doubt if it's really going to take place. And even fewer do this third, and that is worship. A lot of people pray. Some have faith. Very few worship. Now come with me here for just a moment. I know you're saying, that's kind of backwards, isn't it? Because I'm worship. I'm in church every Sunday, especially on first Sunday. I'm in church every Sunday, right? I worship. I got my podcast. I got my Pandora. I got my, I don't know, stuff. Never veer off from your notes. Never do that. It always goes south. I worship, Pastor. No, I'm not talking about general worship or generic worship. I'm talking about specific worship. Just like when there is a promise, you pray connected to the promise. Are you hearing me? And whenever you have faith, your faith is connected to the promise. This is not general worship. This is not worship in a generic capacity. This is not just coming and lifting your hands and singing the songs and having a good time in worship, or even adoration or love or in sincerity. Yes, no doubt, but it's not that kind of worship that I'm speaking of this morning. This worship is worship that is specifically and directly connected to the promises of God. It's a particular kind of worship. It is the kind of worship, it is the kind of faith, and is the kind of prayer that is necessary for you to overcome the barriers, the obstacles, the walls that stand between you and what God promised you. Nothing God promises you will ever come easy. There has to be something to stand between you and it. And the way we break down the walls, jump over the walls, knock the walls down to get to what God has promised is a particular kind of prayer, a particular kind of faith, and a particular kind of worship. Are you guys with me so far? Now, my intent today is not to deal with the prayer. Sort of already dealt with the faith a little bit. But I want to focus on worship. What kind of worship is needed in order for walls to come down and the promises of God to be experienced? If you'd come with me to the book of Joshua, chapter 1, we find an extremely interesting section of scripture. This is at the close of Israel's wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. They've been wandering around in circles on a journey that would have taken 11 days. They've been going around in circles for 40 years. That one entire generation has died out. Now the next second generation is alive. Joshua and Caleb are the only two of the original ones who came out of Egypt from their bondage through the 40-year journey in the wilderness. Now they are on the edge of the promised land. This is the land that God has promised to them. This is their promise. God says to Joshua in Joshua chapter 1 verse 2, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving them," the children of Israel, "to the land that I am giving to them." Now, this is a promise of God. This promise was not just given on this day. On this day, this promise was already given 40 years earlier. When they were coming out of Egypt, got to Kadesh Barnea at the edge of the Canaan land, the edge of the promised land, the edge of God's promise that he gave to Abraham some 400 years before that. He said, "I promise that I will give you the land of Canaan. It is a land of milk and a land of honey, a land of prosperity, a land of abundance, a land of peace and a land of joy, where you will be my people and I will be your God. It is a land that is currently occupied by the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Canaanites, but I will give that land to you, and there you will establish my name and you will be my nation and I will be your God." And it was a promised land, a promised future, and a promised place. It was their destiny. So much faith
that they had in that promise, that Abraham bequeathed the land to Isaac, his son. And Isaac bequeathed it to Jacob, and Jacob, he bequeathed it to all of his sons. They were passing down from generations. Listen, a land that they didn't even own. They were leaving land, property. They were leaving a nation to their children and children's children of land and a national property that they didn't even own. They believed God when God said he would do it. That's faith. To believe in your future so strongly that you treat your future as if it is real in your present. I promise you, nothing God has ever promised you will ever be realized until you can see it. Until you can see it in your eyes, in your mind, in your thoughts, in your heart. You can see it, you can taste it, you can feel it. It is as real could get. Nothing God ever has for you will ever come until it first becomes a part of your now existential today reality, where I'm walking in it as if it were mine, though I don't have any title to it. I don't have any evidence of it. My faith is all the evidence that I need. And they so convincingly, so strongly were persuaded that what God had said was theirs, that they kept bequeathing it and passing it down, even though they didn't even own it. Now is the moment of truth. Second opportunity. First time at Kadesh Barnea 40 years ago, 12 spies went into this land. 10 came back and say, we can't do it. They big. The people over there is giants. We are like grasshoppers in their eyes. We cannot take the land. Let's turn around and go back to Egypt. And two of those spies, Joshua and Caleb, they said, you must be crazy. This is ours for the taking. The people are like fodder for us, waiting for us to conquer them. Let's go now and take the land. How many of you all are like Joshua and Caleb? When you face giants and walls and walled cities, and when there's a barrier between you and what God's promised you, but yet you trust God anyway, and you're ready to go take it and take it right now. That's the spirit of Joshua and Caleb 40 years ago. But because 10 said don't, majority ruled, the nation of Israel forfeited the opportunity to go into the promised land. God diverted their direction. He rerouted them and took them in circles for 40 years on a journey that only took 11 days because they would not believe God. Now they're back again at a spot where they can see the land. They've crossed over Jordan. They've gotten to Jordan, rather, about to cross over, and they can see the land. And here it is. He says, Moses is dead. Now go over Jordan. I'm giving you the land. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. He says, every place you have the faith to step on is yours. If you have the faith to step out, if you have the commitment to step out and take action on what God has promised you. Don't delay. Don't procrastinate. Don't talk yourself out of it. Don't sabotage your own future. Don't make excuses. Don't act on your insecurities. Step out in faith. Are you listening to me, right? Are you hearing me? He says, every place you step on, I'll give it to you. Now, here's the question. It's not what I'm preaching about. This is. If it's a promise and God says, I'll give it to you, why did they have to fight for it? If God promised it, if it's a promise from God and God says, I'll give it to you, it's yours, why did they have to fight for it? The promises of God do not negate human responsibility. Just because God has promised you something, that does not mean you are excused from having to work for it. From having to struggle and fight for it. There is an enemy, are you listening to me? That currently occupies your destiny. And it's not your boss, and it's not your competitor, and it's not the other business down the street. It's not the other clients that are going to a different company. That's not who I'm talking about. There is an enemy. His name is Satan, and he currently occupies the destiny God has for you. And all of his imps and all of his demons, demons like doubt, are living in your land. Demons like fear are living in your land. Demons like low self-esteem is living in your land. That I can't do it. I'm not enough. I don't know enough. I don't have enough. I'm the wrong color, wrong height, wrong build, wrong weight. I'm too short, too tall. It's living in your land. The demon of comparison, comparing yourself with others, are the walls we have to overcome to get to where God is calling us to go. And here's what I know. A lot of people are going to pray about it. And a few less are actually going to have the right faith about it. But very few are going to have the right worship. And if you don't have the right worship, your faith is null and void. And if you don't have faith, your prayers are a simple conversation. What gives power to prayer is faith. And what gives value and validity to faith is the object of my faith, and that is the God that I worship. And if I don't know how to worship God, then my faith and believing is in the air. It's nothing, because I don't have the right object to my faith. And if I don't have faith, my prayers are just talking in the wind. Are you with me so far? It says, every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you. As I said to Moses, verse 4, from the wilderness in this Lebanon, as far as the great river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, somebody else's land, and the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. The Hittites, and the Hittites also intimates the idea of the Hittites, that mentioning of the nation, it also intimates the Canaanites. The Canaanites is a group of people that we know them by all the ites of the Old Testament. The Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Moabites, all of these ites are in the land. And they are convincing us not to go. There's a wall placed between us and what God has promised us. And now we have to figure out how to get that wall to fall. It says, if you can just believe, no man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Prayer, faith, and worship. Prayer, we all do it. Faith, not very many people do it. Worship, very few do it right. One I want to talk about is worship. Because worship is the key that unlocks our faith. Worship is the key that unlocks our faith. Many of us come to church and we never worship. We come, but we don't worship. We sit, we sing the songs, but the passion that's needed when we come before God is absent. Our mind wanders, we think thoughts that are drifting in the wind. We don't worship. We're on our problems and we're not worshiping God. Do you know why worship is necessary and critical? Because worship gets my mind off the problem. Prayer is focusing on the problem. Faith is believing that God can fix the problem. Worship elevates me from the problem to God. It works like this. Prayer says, God, do it for me. Do it for me. Please do it for me. Faith says, you're God, and I know you can do it. Worship says, even if you don't, you're still worthy of my worship. It unlocks the key to faith. All right, so that's the promise. You got the promise? All right, now let's look at the obstacle. Look at the obstacle. Joshua chapter 6. Now Jericho was securely shut up. It was closed off, barricaded in. Gates were shut and locked because of the children of Israel. The king of Jericho, a Jebusite king, had heard about Moses, the children of Israel, the battle of Amalek, the battle of Moab, had heard about all the exploits that the children of Israel had done in those 40 years, had heard about the manna that fell from the sky. He had heard about the fire that led them by night, the pillar of cloud by day. And because they knew the children of Israel were coming, they barricaded access to the land. They locked off the land. Jericho was known as one of the many cities of the Jebusite territory where modern-day Jerusalem is that had high fortified walls. This is before the days of cannons, before the days of the ability to shoot rocks or cannons or firepower into these walls and tear them down. The only way you could get into a city was to climb the walls and overcome the walls. And it's hard to climb the walls because the trained archers are there to shoot and to kill anyone who would try to climb the walls. Jericho was practically impregnable. You could not get through it because of its fortified walls. What stands between you and your destiny that is a fortified wall? Externally, I get it. I know the bank said no. The money is not there. I don't have the capital. I understand. Externally, I've got challenges at home. The kids are going. I get it. But internally, those are the big walls. Those are the huge walls that we build up. And we can't even fight ourselves. We can't overcome our own fears, our own hesitations, our own doubts. Our own concerns. Are you hearing me? And so it is that there are these walls that are built high. And here it shut up, none went out, none went in, none came in. And verse 2 doesn't seem to match verse 1. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I've given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. And it doesn't seem to match. It shut up, it's barricaded. The gates are locked. I cannot get past the walls. How have you given me the city? God says, I promised you the city is yours, but you will have to fight to overcome the walls. You're going to have to overcome the walls. I've given it to you, but you got to face the challenges. And so it says, and you shall march around the city. Verse 3 gives this amazing and wonderful story. I want you to go back to look at where this idea and this concept comes from that Joshua has in marching around the walls. It's in Joshua chapter 5. Joshua chapter 5, verse number 13 says, and it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said, are you for us or for our adversaries? It came to pass in verse 13, when Joshua was by Jericho, he is strategizing his way into Jericho. He's strategizing how he's going to fight Jericho, how he's going to overcome the walls, how he's going to position his men, what armaments and weapons to take in. Joshua is strategizing his military campaign. When he's strategizing how he's going to come into Jericho, he looks his eyes up and he sees a man that is standing opposite him with his sword drawn. Now there's a hint given to us in the capitalization of that M that this is not just any man, not just any regular man, but it's not just the capitalization of the man, of the M, it is also what the man says and what the man does and accepts. The man says he is the commander of the Lord's army. The man accepts worship from Joshua as Joshua kneels down to worship him, as we'll read a little bit later. That this is not an ordinary man. This man is a divine man. He is a deified man. Many commentators have stated that this is a theophany or a Christophany. A theophany is when God shows up in a temporary form, visible as a person, as a man. A Christophany or Christophany is when Christ shows up in a temporary form, visible in the personages of a person of a man. I believe it is Christ who shows up and shows himself to Joshua. I believe so because he says, I'm the commander of the Lord's army. This is the infamous angel of the Lord of the Old Testament. In many spaces and places, an angel of the Lord would show up. But this angel of the Lord would be an angel who could bless, an angel who could curse, an angel who could deliver, an angel who had the power of deliverance and intercession. All of the ministries of Jesus, we see the very overt expression of that man who shows up in Daniel's story about the three boys in the fiery furnace, and the form of the fourth man, the king says, is the form like the Son of God. There is this open door of revelation given to Nebuchadnezzar for just a moment, and he identifies the man as the Son of God. But whether you believe it's a Christophany or theophany, what we know is that this man is deity shown up in human form. And the man who is deity, who is God in human form, he shows up with his sword drawn. The drawn sword is always a symbol of fighting and war and battle. And this man came to fight. Now that's good or bad news for Joshua, because he's at the beginning of a fight. He's got to take the land from the Jerichoites that live in the land. And he sees this deity, this God man with his sword drawn. And Joshua needs to know who you with. You with us or you with them? Hear me clearly. That's the first step. Prayer. Prayer is a desire to get God on your side. That's what prayer is. It is, God, I hope you with me. I hope you on my side. Because these folk on the job crazy. I hope you on my side. Because these people out here in this HOA crazy. I hope you're on my side because I ain't got no money. I hope you're on my side because bill collectors still calling and I ain't got a dime to my name. I hope you're on my side because I'm sick and they said they can't help me. I hope you're on my side because I can't afford my medicine. I hope you're on my side. We ain't got nothing to eat. I hope you're on my side. I don't know which direction to go. I hope you're on my side. I can't pass tests. I hope you're on my side. I may not graduate. I hope you're on my side. I need this job. Are you hearing me? That's prayer. Prayer is a desire to get God on your side. Are you hearing me? That's nice, but the problem is that God has already chosen a side. And that side is his. He's on his side. You can beg him all you want. You can plead with him all you want. God will always be on his side. God wants you to get on his side and not you to stay on your side. The motion of prayer is to get God on my side. The power of prayer is when I get on God's side. Many of us are stuck in the motion of prayer. Give me, do for me, help me, bless me. That's the motion of it. We never get to the power of prayer. That is to get on the Lord's side. Second thing about a drawn sword is that it's a battle, and that means that he's already fighting it. The sword in the sheath is, I am not fighting, but prepared to. the sword out of the sheath is, I am engaged in the battle right now. There is a battle happening. Are you listening to me? That is different than the one you're engaged in. You think you're in the real battle. And there is a real battle behind the battle that you're in. You're in an earthly battle with an earthly person or an earthly need or an earthly challenge. And there is a spiritual battle that is happening behind the scenes of your earthly battle. And the outcome of the spiritual battle will determine the outcome of the earthly battle. And if you focus on the earthly battle, the money, the car, the job, the house, the career, if you focus on the earthly battle, you miss the real battle that determines the outcome of the one you're fighting. And he says, are you for us or for our adversaries? Verse 15. And then he said, then the commander of the Lord, so he said, no. But as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come. Are you for us or for our enemies? Neither. I'm in charge of the Lord's army. Oh, I love it. I love it. He says, Joshua, can I be honest with you? I didn't come to fight any Jerichoites. And I didn't come to fight any Israelites. I'm commanding the Lord's army. There is a deeper enemy that is at work that you can't even see. There's an enemy who is working that you cannot see. The Bible says we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness in high places. That there is a spirit that is controlling the people behind that wall. And you'll never get to your promise until you deal with the spirit that is stopping you from the promise. And you're trying to strategize some kind of plan. You're trying to work out a method. You're trying to meet the right people and be in the right place at the right time. You're trying to get your likes and your mentions together on social media. You're trying to get the right followers to follow you. You're trying to dust up your resume and put in your application when you don't even understand it ain't about nothing you do. It's about a spirit that is behind that wall. And the only way you'll get the wall to fall is if you tap into the spirit that has the power to break the spirits behind the wall. Did anybody hear what I said? Prayer is trying to convince God to get on my side. Faith is telling God, you can do it just the way I want you to do it. Nothing's too hard for you. I know you can do it. Worship is a whole nother level. And here's what he says. He says, Joshua, I didn't come for you. I didn't come for them. I'm fighting a battle that you can't even see. When Joshua realized that the man was a deified man, commander of God's army, look at what Joshua does. He falls down on his face to the earth and worshiped. Prayer is, do it for me. Faith is, you can do it. Worship is, God, even if you don't. Even if you don't bring the outcome I want. I know you are still worthy of my worship, my adoration, and my affection. The kind of worship that brings the promises of God into our life, number one, is the kind of worship that leaves the outcome up to God. God determines the outcome of my circumstance. I do not determine how this thing ends up. God determines how it ends up. Is there anybody here that has in your mind what you want to happen, how you want it to happen, what you want God to do? And God is saying, the moment you give up your will, and the moment you accept my will, is the moment you're really worshiping me. Because to worship God any other way is to manipulate God through worship. And there are people who come to church. I'm going to come to church because I really need Jesus. I'm coming because, oh, I got a struggle I'm dealing with and I need the Lord on my side. I'm going to church on Sunday. I'm going to be at church because I need Jesus. That is manipulating him to do you a favor. That is not worship. Worship is coming to him and saying, the truth and veracity of your strength and your personhood is stronger than how you perform when this situation that I'm asking you to perform for me, I want you to do it this way. But God, any way you bless me will be all right with me. I trust you explicitly that you know what is best for me. You know the outcome that I really need. You may do it one way. You may do it another way. But I know that you are the God who controls the outcome. My hands are raised because I have resigned the outcome to your perfect will. I don't tell God how to do it. I don't tell God what to do. I listen for him to tell me what to do. So he bows down and worships. And said, and the man said, and said to him, what does, and Joshua said to the man, what does my Lord say to his servant? He says, how you want me to do this? What's your plan? Worship number one, the kind of worship that brings the promises of God into our life is when we resign the outcome to God. When you say, God, however this ends is your will. I bow before you. I have no sword. I have no shield. I'm coming before you, whatever you will. Secondly, the kind of worship that brings the promises of God into our life is a worship that surrenders my plan for his plan. My plan for his plan. Joshua said, what does my Lord say to his servant? What do you want me to do? Are you hearing this? Real quick, can I take you to Joshua 6? We're going to come back to Joshua 5, but go to Joshua 6 real quick. Let's look at what he says to him. It says in verse number 2, and the Lord said to Joshua, I've given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. Verse 3, you shall march around the city. Okay? So Joshua is on his face. He said, God, however the outcome of this is going to be, it's up to you, it's not up to me. He's on his face. He says, Lord, what do you want me to do? What do you say to your servant? What do you want me to do? I'm in your army. I'm a part of your army. What do you want me to do? And here's what the man says. He says, march around the city. Okay. All you men of war, I like it. You shall go around the city once. Okay. This you shall do 6 days. Just walk. That's it. Just walk. 6 days around the city. One time. Okay. Strange strategy to me, but then he says, and 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But on the 7th day, you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. Let me get this straight. You want me to get the men of war together? Yes. No weapons. Not going to need them. And then get the priests together? Yes. Ram's horns in the priest's hands? Yes. Then you want me to take the Ark of the Covenant? That's the only thing here that makes sense so far. And then after the Ark, you want me to break the rest of the people and we are marching around Jericho? Yes. We're not going to fight. No. We're not going to taunt. No. Not going to charge the walls. No. Just going to march. Then on the last day of the march, come to verse number 5, it shall come to pass when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout. Then the wall of the city will fall down flat. How many know that that strategy doesn't make sense? Come back to verse 4. 3 and 4 says, marching 6 days and 7 days. In Joshua's wildest dreams, he could have never imagined this strategy. with all the generals that he could have amassed to put around him, under no circumstances would he have ever come up with this strategy. This is the only strategy that will tear down the walls. And Joshua, in his military genius, would have never figured this out. Are you understanding this? He would have not known it unless he gave a particular kind of worship that says, God, what do you want me to do? It is a worship that surrenders your plan for his. Now, I'm not saying don't plan. I'm not saying don't have no plan. No. Plan well, but never bank on your plan. Plan and plan strategically, but never put all of your hope on your plan. Because your plan always submits to his. Are you hearing me? The kind of worship that brings God's promises to fruition in our life is the kind that leaves the outcome up to him. Are you on my side or their side? I ain't on neither one of your side. You better get on my side. Whatever he wants is what we do. Secondly, the kind of worship that abandons my plan, surrenders my plan to his plan, no matter how ridiculous his plan seems, is that kind of surrender that brings God's promises into our life. Come back to Joshua 5. Joshua chapter 5. It says, are you for us or for our adversaries? Verse 14. He said, neither. Joshua said, what do you want me to do? Then the commander of the Lord, verse 15, said to Joshua, take your sandal off your foot, for the place where you stand is holy. And Joshua did so. He says, Joshua, take your sandal off your feet. If I could just put an aside here for just a moment, that God didn't want anything from Joshua that was inauthentic or that was non-genuine. He wanted nothing from Joshua that was artificial to come between him and God. God doesn't want the artificial stuff in our life to show up when we worship him. That when you worship God, take off the sandals. Take the title off. Take the accolades off. Take the image off. Take the money off. Take the capital you have in the bank off. Take the status you have earned off. When you come before God, you come before God with absolutely nothing of your own to impress him or to make him notice you. God is not impressed with nothing that we have. Everything we have, God gave it to us. That's nothing but sandals. Your money, your status, your background, it's sandals. Your education, your skill set, your intellect, your know-how, your wisdom is nothing but sandals. All of that is stuff that is impending and impeding you from getting where God has you to be. It says, take your sandals off. Jesus, he told his disciples to take off their shoes in John 13 so he could wash their feet. He could never cleanse them until they removed the thing that was artificial. Many of us come to worship with such artificiality. We stand before God and we're just faking it till we make it. And it ain't worship. If you're just faking it, it ain't worship. If you're going through the motions, it ain't worship. Or if you're presenting you in flesh, in carnality, it's not worship. It is when we present to him spirit and truth. No sandals, no leather, no artificiality, nothing that makes him be unable to connect with the heart of us. So he removes his sandals from his shoes, his sandals from his feet. When he does that, as he is worshiping God, as he is worshiping him, then the strategy is given to him. I want you to notice what it says in Joshua chapter number 6. In Joshua chapter 6, if you'd go to that passage, please. Verse number 7. So it says in verse number 7. Take me to verse 7, if you would. Take me to the next verse. That's okay. We'll stay here. We'll make it work. It shall come to pass when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, thank you so much. This is exactly the verse that I needed. The sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout. Then the wall of the city will fall down flat. All right, here's the third thing. Are you listening to me? The first kind of worship that brings the promises of God into our life is the worship whereby we leave the outcome to God. The second kind of worship that brings the promises of God into our life is the kind of worship where we resign and surrender our plan for His plan. And the third kind of worship that brings the promises of God into our life is whenever our worship of Him is done in victory and we shout before we see the promises. Yeah, yeah. They were right. It was verse 5. It wasn't verse 7 at all. It was verse 5. They were so right. Isn't it something whenever the media team knows the sermon better than you know the sermon? Ain't that something? It's whenever you shout before you get the victory. Now, many of us, we don't worship like that. We come to church on one side of the wall, in the pain, in the struggle, in the difficulty, in the tears. And when we come to church on this side of the wall, we come to moan and grieve and complain about what's not right, what's going wrong, and where the pain is and what's hurting us. That's not worship. Worship is whenever the pain is there and whenever the loss is there, whenever the agony is there, but something in you causes you to shout with victory before the battle is even started. They're marching around the walls one time for 6 days. On the seventh day, they march 7 times around the wall. They take ram's horns and they blow. And when the sound of the horn makes the musical sound, the people would then shout with a loud shout before there was a victory. It's great that you know how to praise and worship God after you get what it is you're asking Him for. I think that's wonderful and there's nothing wrong with it. You ought to praise Him. You ought to worship Him. But it is more powerful when you come to praise and worship God and you have no evidence whatsoever of the victory and the promise that you have been given by God, but yet you believe Him so strongly that you will worship Him and you will worship and praise Him as if you already have it when you don't have it at all. Is anybody hearing what I'm saying to you? It is that kind of worship. And when they made the shout, the walls fell down flat. When they shout, when they worshiped Him, when they praised Him, the fear fell down, the doubt fell down, the challenges fell down, the insecurity fell down. All of their depression and discouragement fell down as they worshiped God in victory. Here's what this looks like. It looks like, God, I thank You. I don't know how You're going to do it. I have no idea when You're going to do it. But I trust that You are going to do it. God, however You bring me out, it's up to You. The outcome is Your choice. If You leave me here and don't heal me on this side, I have full confidence that You will heal me on the other side. If the medicine doesn't work, I will praise You. If the job doesn't come through, I will praise You. If the bills pile up, I will praise You. If I can't see my way out of a dilemma, I will praise You. If the legal issues bury me, I will still give You worship. Whatever You choose to do, the outcome is Yours. God, I have no idea how You're going to do it. You can speed it up 5 years and do it right now. You can delay it 5 years and make me stay here and sustain me in the midst of it. I don't know where, I don't know when, this school, that place or this one, this city or that city. I have no idea where you're going to do it. Your plan is the one I want, not mine, but your will be done. This is what it looks like. Hands raised to God. And you're saying, God, I don't see it. I don't even feel it. I have no evidence of it. The proof is not even present. But I want to thank you in advance. I want to worship you right now. Even though it's not here and it's not visible, but I worship you because I don't have to see it to trust you. I don't have to feel it to love you. I know you're worthy of it whether I have it or not. You got the power to turn it around. You got the power to resist what the enemy brings in. You got the power to negate how the devil has come in. You've got the power to put a standard against the enemy. God, I worship you, even though I can't see the end. That's the kind of worship that brings the promises of God. Prayer is good, but it just points God to the problem. Faith is necessary, but it affirms that God has power over the problem. Worship is mandatory because it resigns the whole problem over to Him, and it focuses on His plan, His outcome, and His victory. Give Him praise, give Him glory. That's our lesson.